You're an expert in this field, so you must, as you kind of spoke to there, you must get pretty, I can feel it when you're speaking, get pretty pissed off when you see unhelpful information being pushed on, I don't know, social media or online or through books, these sort of simplified narratives. What are some of the most common misconceptions that you speak to your patients about? You've mentioned one there about this, like 8 hours of sleep being the optimal.
Yeah.
And even when I put out on my Instagram earlier, what are the key questions you want to ask? I'm speaking to a sleep therapist expert today. I'd say the vast majority, or at least the medium question was, do I need to get exactly 7 or 8 hours sleep?
Every single night.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is definitely the biggest one we get. You do not... that perfection is the enemy of the good. Have you ever heard that term? Because at the end of the day, it's true. Yes, your body loves consistency and regulation, but that does not mean you have to get 8 hours of sleep every night. Think about it differently. Think about it over a month, for example. We love this idea of the way we look at time is slightly different to the way your body looks at time. And over a month, you might actually be all right. So maybe one night you get 6.5 hours, the next night you get 7.5, and then the next night you might get slightly different. As long as it's fairly consistent and maybe 80% of the time you're doing fairly well and you're giving yourself the right opportunity to sleep, that's okay. Your body's going to do, you know, it will do what it needs to do. And with that, a caveat to that is this understanding of sleep debt. So we don't understand sleep debt properly. People think it's an eye for an eye. I lose 4 hours, I must gain 4 hours. Well, what happens when your body, being as efficient as it is, doesn't actually need you to gain an extra 4 hours of sleep to recover you? Your expectation is that it should. And when your expectation doesn't get met, you get upset about it and you change your behavior. And that's when you start getting sleep problems, when the reality is your brain is so smart that even in the certain amount of hours that you get normally at night, it can recover you from that sleep deprivation by just improving or increasing the sleep stage that it thinks you missed the most, for example. But because we have a lack of education, we believe we don't get some sleep, we need to regain that sleep. And when we don't regain that sleep, that's when the anxieties and the stresses over not sleeping start. So that's a big one, the sleep debt one. The other one is this idea that fatigue and sleepiness are the same things. So yes, when we don't sleep well, we get a lot of fatigue. So fatigue is anything from feeling like your body needs to rest, to needing to shut your eyes, to pain, to your brain buzzing because you've been working so hard for like 48 hours straight and you don't know what to do with yourself. But the only definition of sleepiness is the ability to shut your eyes and within a few minutes, you're falling asleep. So if you were saying to me right now, Steph, I am so, so sleepy, I'd probably say to you, well, you don't look it. Because right now you don't look tired in the way that I would expect you to be falling asleep. I mean, you wouldn't be able to sit still. You would be sort of probably your eyes would be shutting dozing all the off. Time, dozing off, having little micro sleeps. That's sleepiness. And that's what we should really be understanding as a cue to sleep. So in the evenings, if you're not feeling that, then don't be worried. Give yourself permission to stay up later. Because you can't dictate what happens to you during the day. And there are so many variables that affect your sleep. You are never going to be able to control over them. Having good sleep hygiene, how many good sleepers do you know have it? So good sleep hygiene is all these things that we get told we should do. So the 10 top things that you should do: have a warm bath, never drink coffee ever again, never have alcohol, you know, all these things that you're supposed to do. But if you look at good sleepers, are they following all those things? No, they're not. And they're still sleeping really well. And that's to show that most of the time, sleeping poorly comes down to brain training and the patterns we get ourselves into. Mm-hmm. You start going to bed early, you might be able to get to sleep earlier, but you're probably not going to be able to have that sleep all the way through the night, because at some point or another, your body's going to be like, well, you've had enough now. But your expectation is you should be able to sleep till 7. And why didn't I sleep till 7? Or if you lie in, you keep changing the goalposts of your wake up time, which is the most important thing that you should be looking at, not your bedtime. If you keep changing that goalpost, your body doesn't know when to feed you. It doesn't know when to make you feel alert because you've changed everything. Mm. And so, of course, you're not going to be sleepy at the right time in the evening.
The time you wake up is the a much more important time to be focused on.
Yes. The things, your morning routine is going to be way more important than your evening routine when it comes to your sleep at night. But because people see that as a far away time compared to when you go to sleep, they don't really focus on it. In fact, haven't we been taught in this society that lying in is a luxury? I can't believe that we have made it okay at the weekend to lie in so much. But during the week, one of the only things that gets us up is work. It makes absolutely no sense to me. I'm not saying it's the worst thing in the world. I'm not saying I never lie in, but I don't use it as a compensatory method for a bad night's sleep, because that's when you're going to get into trouble.
Because that's kind of throwing your schedule off. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So if you lie in on the weekends, then you're going to pay for it at some other point.
Yeah. Right. Why are we not looking, you know, if you have to lie in so significantly every single weekend, why are we not looking at during the week and thinking, why am I doing this to myself? At the time when I need it the most, I will choose to get less sleep. And then at the weekend, I'll just compensate.
Mm. And people, and you, much of the conversation around sleep in society talks about the amount of hours. And it's almost like the amount of hours that I was in the bed.
Mm.
What's your sort of rebuttal to that?
Quality over quantity every single time, every single time. And if you have good quality and you need longer, your body will tell you and you will get more sleep. But people are so obsessed with duration. And I think people don't understand what I mean by sleep opportunity. I mean, every single night, most of the time, so about 80% of the time, I will give myself a 7 to 8 hour sleep opportunity, sleep window. But I do not mean that if I'm not sleepy, I take myself into a dark room and shut myself down. I just know that it's there. I've got a bedroom, a place I really want to be to sleep, that is available to me during those hours. And I will not sleep outside those hours. And that is the big thing, is you can dictate to your body when you don't sleep, but you cannot dictate when you do. And by doing that, you will force your body to be in a nice regular cycle. It's actually really, really simple once you know how to do it. And every time I fix someone of their insomnia there, and honestly, 50, 60 years of insomnia, they often turn around to me. They're like, I don't know why I wasn't taught this when I was younger. And I do believe if we taught everyone how to sleep properly, give them a proper sleep education when they're little, I wouldn't exist. Insomnia wouldn't exist.
A lot of people, when they knew that I was speaking to you today, they want to know how they can sleep better in the short term tonight. They're looking for some kind of quick fix to a problem they've had for a long time. Mm. What would you say to those people?
Okay, so the first thing I'd say is that you're never going to find that reactive, very quick method. It's never going to happen. And even if you find it, I promise you, it won't work in the long term. It might control your condition in the short term, but not in the long term. I can teach you how to sleep, but it's going to take you a few weeks, not a night. But in the meantime, don't worry. It's okay. Like part of this is, there is a solution. So what I do is called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. It is not the same as CBT for depression or anxiety or anything else. And it is just about retraining yourself to sleep and building up that strong sleep drive. You have to do that over time. But in the short term, I usually tell people that they do not need to worry. Nothing bad is going to happen to you. And the reality is that it's more your mood that will affect your day when you wake up in the morning than the bad night's sleep you just had. Mm. So I know we've got evidence to show that when you have a bad night's sleep, your cognitive abilities, etc., are going to be reduced. Mm. However, if you think about how you generalize that, you're not going to lose your job. Mm. You're not going to perform horrifically in that meeting because you didn't get a good night's sleep. It would be far better for you to go to bed later and make sure you're lovely and sleepy and only get 4 hours than to go to bed 8 hours before that meeting and toss and turn and be fidgety and stressed and anxious all night. That's what I do. I still get nervous when I have to do like a lecture in front of 500 people. Of course I get nervous, but instead of, you know, focusing on my notes just before I go to bed, I'll put everything aside. I'll go and enjoy myself, do something I really love to do. I'll get ready for bed a bit earlier than usual just so that I do not have to think about anything when I get sleepy. And when I am sleepy, even if it's 2, 3, 4 hours later than usual, I know that I'll go and have a really lovely 3 or 4 hours sleep. And then I'll wake up and I'll be like, great, I know I'm going to be a bit sleepy today, but that's only going to help me sleep tonight. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have an epic day. I don't care that I'm a bit sleepy. Sleepiness is amazing. Sleepiness is such a good thing for you. Why are we teaching people that sleepiness is a bad thing? You need sleepiness to sleep.
you are always one decision away from taking your business to the next level. And a decision that's helped me to transform my business is moving over to NetSuite, who I'm excited to say are a sponsor of this podcast. If you don't know already, NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. It's reduced IT costs because it lives in the cloud, so you can access it from anywhere. And the cost of managing and running multiple systems because it's in one unified business management suite. My team and I don't have to worry about tasks being manual and clunky, and it means that I can be more efficient and to focus on more important things like bringing you the best episodes and guests on this show. So I become one of the 37,000 companies that have already made the move over to NetSuite. NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks, so head to netsuite.com/Bartlett for a free product tour. Back to the episode. You are always one decision away from taking your business to the next level. And a decision that's helped me to transform my business is moving over to NetSuite, who I'm excited to say are a sponsor of this podcast. If you don't know already, NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. It's reduced IT costs because it lives in the cloud, so you can access it from anywhere. And the cost of managing and running multiple systems because it's in one unified business management suite. My team and I don't have to worry about tasks being manual and clunky, and it means that I can be more efficient and to focus on more important things like bringing you the best episodes and guests on this show. So I become one of the 37,000 companies that have already made the move over to NetSuite. NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks, so head to netsuite.com/Bartlett for a free product tour. Back to the episode.